Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
As we move into the soft red winter wheat country of the lower Midwest, it's more of a subtle drop in condition there. We're mostly seeing an erosion on the higher end categories, your good to excellent ratings.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
You have to consider that this time of year when the crop's dormant, sometimes the crop just doesn't look as good as you move through winter. There's certainly plenty of opportunity for this lower Midwestern winter wheat crop to rebound come spring, especially if we get some improved moisture. The good to excellent ratings dropping 17 percentage points in Illinois from 72 to 55% good to excellent. We've also seen some decreases in condition in other lower Midwestern states, including Ohio, going from 80% good to excellent at the end of November to an end of December reading of 71% good to excellent.
This is Agriculture Today.
I think we'll summarize 2023 as we hit a new mark as far as never before seen, with $207 billion of liability being covered by the programs that RMA administers.
Marcia Bunger is the administrator of USDA's Risk Management Agency.
We continue to see exponential growth and, of course, lots of interest in specialty crops, organic crops. And so last year was a big year for a lot of new products for our specialty crop growers. But also what was huge was our double crop initiative, which was also historic in nature. It was a call from, you know, this administration for RMA to see how we could assist farmers with growing more food as a result of the invasion in Ukraine and the concerns about shortages of food. And so RMA took that and ran with it. And after visiting with over 70 stakeholders, we expanded our double crop coverage into 1,500 counties. And as a result of that, we provided opportunities, and we saw a huge response from farmers when they came back and said, yes, we want to try this, and yes, we want coverage. So we saw probably over 4,000 requests for new written agreements, which was never done before either. So it has been a lot of record-breaking in 2020.
And with so much going on with RMA, they're now launching the Livestock Roadshow.
We learned from last year with the response of the roadshow that we did last year for whole farm and micro farm. We received a lot of positive feedback that this was something that, you know, that RMA has not ever done before either, and that it was very successful, well attended. And so going into this winter, we thought, you know, why don't we do another one? But let's focus on livestock. And of course, I have a personal interest. Just because not only do my husband and I have row crops, but we also have a 200-head cow-calf operation. And so I thought, perfect. While there has been a lot of growth in livestock, there's still lots of areas of the country where I still hear from producers, ranchers, you know, what does RMA have for us? And, of course, that was just a sign to me that we need to continue our efforts educating and informing livestock growers. So the Livestock Roadshow has been hitting the ground and running. We've already had some in-person, I think total 12 in-person informational meetings around livestock products, but then also two virtual for those that can't attend in person. So we have coming up next week and the following week, two virtual workshops, one on January 8th at noon Central Time, and then again the following week, January 17th at 7 p.m. Pacific time. And the links for getting registered to get on to those virtual workshops are available at the RMA website. So any and all are welcome to attend. So whether you're a livestock grower yourself or if you just have interest in what RMA is doing, if you're a crop insurance agent, please consider and get signed up, and you will listen to a number of subject matter experts talk about a number of livestock policies, including the weaned calf product.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We've continued to see, you know, retail prices very strong.
Dr. Darrell Peel is an Oklahoma State livestock economist talking about beef prices for consumers.
Concerns about demand is one thing, but the fact is that with tighter supplies, we're probably not going to have much of an opportunity to see any real relief, if you will, in retail grocery prices. Consumers will eat less beef because we're not going to produce as much beef, but that doesn't mean that demand isn't there. It just means that we don't have as much beef to go around, so we're going to ration it in the marketplace.
What's ahead for 2024?
I think we're going to see the general situation continue to develop. You know, the main thing probably going forward is that we're going to have even smaller cattle inventories in 2024. We don't have the official numbers yet. We won't until, you know, a month into the year. But it's pretty clear from the slaughter rates that we had for cows and heifers in 2023. They did decline, but they didn't decline enough to suggest that we're actually rebuilding the herd yet. So that's one of the things that we're still looking for is when do we start that process? Cattle numbers will be smaller going into 2024, and in terms of the squeeze or the availability of feeder supplies, which then go into feedlots and ultimately turn into beef production, that's going to get squeezed a lot more at some point in time when we start retaining heifers to rebuild the herd. So I look for a lot more supply pressure, if you will. That'll support the market. It's going to support higher prices for cattle. It's going to squeeze beef production as we go forward because we're going to keep those heifers for breeding rather than running them through the feedlots as we have been. And so beef production will decline another 6 to 6.5% probably in 2024. So we're going to continue to see a lot of supply pressure building on the market. The biggest unknown going forward, again, will be kind of the demand side. I think we have to keep an eye on those outside market factors, the broader geopolitical events that impact not only the reality, but also perceptions and fears and uncertainty in the market. Those will be big factors as we go into 2024.
Talks trade.
Yeah, you know, trade reacts to the market situation as well. So in 2023, we started to see some decrease in beef exports under tighter supplies and higher prices. That will likely continue in 2024. Now, it's impacted by the strength of the dollar as well. That adds another layer of challenge, if you will, for foreign customers. We've had a strong dollar, certainly through most of 2023. We'll see how it goes forward in 2024. Changes in the exchange rate could have an impact. On the import side, again, as supplies tighten up in the U.S., particularly supplies for processing beef, which supports our ground beef market, that happens when we cut cow culling, if you will, to start herd rebuilding, then we'll probably see more imports coming in terms of processing supplies. And that marginally changes the supply in the U.S. It's the market response to tighter supplies and higher prices in the U.S. So we expect to see those numbers, but it doesn't really change the fact that we're in a very tight supply situation in the U.S.
And offers advice.
Depending on your current situation, some producers in certainly outside of Oklahoma, there's still drought around, so we're maybe dealing with sort of those constraints on what we can do. In other situations, we're recovering from that. So those resource constraints are an important part of it. Financial perspective is important as well. But I think, you know, all in all, we've got a fairly sort of bullish scenario set up here, not only for 2024, but for, you know, at least a year or two after that. So I think producers want to sort of think about how they want to be positioned to take advantage of that and think about the things they can do from a cost management standpoint and from the overall, you know, herd situation that they find themselves in to be able to take advantage of the market opportunities that will be out there.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I work with a company called White Commercial, and our role in the market is to work with commercial hedgers.
That's Jeff Reardon with White Commercial Corporation on their role in the commodity market space at a recent CFTC hearing.
So that's all we work with is the commercial hedgers. So when the farmers go and deliver their grain, they're going to deliver it to the commercial hedgers that we work with. And specifically, our customer base is on the smaller side of the agricultural industry. So what you're going to find is our larger companies are cooperatives. And so those are farmer-owned organizations, and So their main concern in times of stress, and we're talking about initial margin today, is access to capital, because they have to, they must stay in their hedge positions. And every bank that they work with and throughout the entire industry, the most important thing to those bankers is that we stay hedged. So that's my role at White Commercial. I came on board about 15 years ago. If you remember, in 2008, the commodities markets were a little bit volatile as well. And that's when I came. I transitioned from the banking industry into White Commercial to help our customers with their banking relationships. And I'm a CPA, so naturally I was helping with the mark-to-market that Suzanne was talking with as well. So that's my role, is basically to train the lenders, basically our customers, their lenders, and their accounting partners on this mark-to-market process and help them to access the capital that they need.
He is expressing some changes coming in margins from the CME Group. Suzanne Sprague explains.
The last slide I thought I'd talk through just gives you a picture for one of our energy products and how you can think about the difference between SPAN and SPAN 2 margins. They're largely in line. We do see small increases and decreases at portfolio and overall clearing level for those changes, depending on the directionality of the portfolio. But overall, the margins are meant to be similar. So this is an example that we show for the crude contract. The light blue line towards the top and the very bottom represents the SPAN 2 margin model. The darker blue line represents the SPAN margin model, and then the line, the light blue line in the middle, is the daily price change for that product. So here you can see that SPAN and SPAN 2 largely track each other in terms of the coverage that's provided by those margin models.
But how are markets affected by war? Dr. Callum Turvey is an economist at Cornell.
Obviously, the Russians' invasion of Ukraine was a major disruption on the world wheat futures market, a very rare event, you know, the largest war in Europe since the Second World War, to study it. The presence of the CME Ukrainian wheat futures price provide a rare opportunity to look at the relationship between war and commodities. The pre-war causality pattern we just discussed was Black Sea wheat was a strong influence on the market. Ukrainian wheat was more of a follower rather than a leader. But that reversed as time went on. And of course, there are shifting dynamics continually. The war today is not the same war it was a month ago. It's not the same war it was a year ago. And all of these things are going to affect the prices depending on what's going on the ground. What our results show is that the markets are paying attention to those things as well. And yes, of course, exogenous shocks such as these are going to have profound and global effects.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
So really what we're trying to do is allow active natural resource management.
Chairman of the Natural Resources Federal Land Subcommittee, Tom Tiffany from Wisconsin.
Whether it's in regards to mining, forestry, all those type of things, offshore drilling, we are trying to allow those things to happen in a permitted process, do it in a smart manner, but make sure that we are independent here in America, because we've seen what happens when we're no longer energy independent. The military talks regularly about how we are not producing the minerals to be able to create the items that they need to have a strong military, very concerned about that, especially in relation to China. And so we're talking about let's lighten up on the red tape, especially that was created in the previous session of Congress, and give people more freedom to be able to produce. Utilizing natural resources is at the heart of our prosperity. We need to be able to utilize our natural resources. And you know what, Tony? Over the last few decades, we have gotten so good at limiting the amount of environmental harm. We know from 60, 70 years ago that we weren't doing the right thing, that we needed to do better to keep the environment clean. We are doing that. America is a world leader, and I believe we can do both, protect the environment while also utilizing our natural resources for our prosperity.
When it comes to management of resources, some are questioning the management at the southern border. Alexander Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security in Eagle Pass, Texas, on Monday, answering about the caravans coming in.
I would take issue with your characterization that it is easy to get to the United States. I think we all know very well the perilous journey that migrants take in the hands of ruthless smugglers who don't care about their well-being. They care only about making a profit. That perilous journey has been reported and has been shared with us as Border Patrol agents interview migrants. It is very important to understand that when an individual is released, they are released into immigration enforcement proceedings where they can make a claim under the laws that Congress has passed. And if their claim does not succeed, they are removed and they are subject to a 5-year ban on admission. We have returned, removed, or expelled an extraordinary number of individuals, and we will continue to do so as we enforce the laws.
Question was actually about being easy once they're inside the U.S., but Mayorkas also addressed working with partners.
We believe that when we work in partnership with countries to the south, with Mexico, with Panama, with Costa Rica, with Colombia, with Ecuador, with all of the countries, we will have a significant impact on the number of encounters that we experience at our southern border. And it is too early to tell whether the significant drop in the number of encounters we have experienced over the past week is a function of the season, the holiday season, or whether it is a function of the fact that the Mexican authorities have resumed their enforcement operations, and it very well may be a combination of both. It is too early to tell, but we're watching it very carefully. We remain vigilant, and we are tremendously proud of the ceaseless work of U.S. Customs and Border Protection.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
2023 really started to see, kind of the things that have been building for the last several years really start to take a hold.
So as we recap 2023, we'll start with Oklahoma State livestock economist, Dr. Daryl Peel.
Best expressed by the tremendous run-up we had in prices. It really started at the end of 2022. We had, for the last year, we had a tremendous run-up. Now, obviously, later in the year, we had some, sort of nervousness develop in the market, but all in all, we're still well above where we were a year ago. So, beef production, which was at a record level in 2022, really as a result of the liquidation in the cattle herd that we had in 2021 and 22, changed as we knew it would. And so we started to see beef production decline in 2023, and that sets up where, kind of the situation that we're going to be in for the next couple of years.
And a different look at 23 from Oklahoma State beef breeding specialist, Dr. Mark Johnson.
For those of us in the cattle business, it's been a good year. It's been a year that it looks like we'll close out at a profitable margin in all sectors of the cattle business, the cow-calf sector, the stalker yearling sector, as well as the finishing sector. And that is indeed truly rare. It's been a year when some timely rains and good pasture management allowed our grazing lands to heal and our hay inventory ebbed a little bit higher. As well as we think of the national cow inventory at this point, we have a cow inventory, the lowest in about 61 years, that indicates the value of all categories of cattle is going to remain high for some years to come. As we reach the end of 2023 and think about all we've got to be thankful for, I consider a few things to reflect on as we move forward to the future. The first is, while we know that cow inventory is going to help our cattle prices for a while to come, and it doesn't look like we're yet in an expansion phase where we're going to see the cow inventory increase anytime soon, that remains an uncertainty. But one thing that is for certain, if we're going to rebuild cow inventory, there's opportunity in that we can rebuild with a better cow herd. And what do I mean by this? Through selection and mating, we can actually end up with a set of cows that, with regard to their mature size, their level of milk, their fertility, their breed composition, that fit our production environment and our marketing plan better. And so the last few years in herd liquidation leads to an inventory as far as building back better. Second thing to keep in mind, it is beyond the cattle. A grazing ecosystem, we also need to keep in mind the soil and the plants. As we think about the future and potentially upping our cow numbers, we want to manage pastures to give them the competitive advantage over grazing pressure. Maybe that means we remain understocked for a while. Perhaps that means we let that grass get ahead of the cows before we turn out on it in the spring. But the point is, we want to permit some time for grazing lands to recover from drought. It's not an immediate process. Third thing to keep in mind is, as we rebuild our cow numbers, we want to consider the input cost, the interest rates, and the feedstuffs that we've got on hand relative to proper stocking rates and what can lead to profitability for us. And finally, as we think about the future, the key to profitability long-term in the cow-calf sector is the amount of grazable forage we can produce and finding a balance between that and our level of production, or particularly our stocking rate and mature cow size, and how well that fits the amount of forage we can reasonably produce year to year.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
From the academic side, I was teaching futures and options. I teach the undergraduate futures and options class at Cornell University. And the war broke out in February of 2022, and I had to explain to my students what was going on with wheat markets.
Dr. Callum Turvey is with Cornell University talking about what happened when war broke out in Ukraine.
We then followed that through, and I put a master's student on it to really try to find out what was going on in this due to war. There was no literature on what the impact of war and conflict is on futures prices. And here we had a very unique situation where we saw an immediate reaction with wheat futures prices. But there are also two other contracts. There's the Black Sea contract, futures contract, which is generally Russian-ported wheat, cash-settled. And then there's a Ukrainian futures contract, which is Ukrainian ports, cash-settled. At the time of the war outbreak, I'm trying to explain these markets. You know, is it going to be a long war or a short war? Why has the market gone up by, 33% from $8 to around $11 prices of wheat? And explaining that in such times, people have to guess, were they going to take Kiev in 3 days or 4 days, or was it going to be a prolonged war? The political risk, market risk, trade risk, financial risk, currency risks, all of these things have forces which are going to affect these futures contracts, even though they are all in U.S. dollar denominations.
So what are the findings?
We found that pre-war, we saw that Black Sea wheat, that is wheat originating from Russian ports, really had a strong influence on Ukrainian wheat prices, right? So Ukrainian wheat prices mostly followed Black Sea wheat prices. Ukrainian wheat prices also followed the Chicago wheat prices. But we also saw that the Chicago wheat markets also followed the Black Sea wheat prices, right? So in terms of those markets and the global price in Chicago, the Black Sea ports were more influential than the Ukrainian ports. At war, January 2022, leading up to the war, Ukrainian wheat causally influenced. That, now you can see the direction of flow. Chicago traders got really worried about what was happening in Ukraine. And as Ukraine prices change, these were strongly influencing in that direction the Chicago markets. Chicago wheat still influenced the Black Sea wheat price. Causality by July 2022, so we know that the war is going to last a longer time. The causality between the Black Sea wheat and Ukrainian wheat fractured altogether. They're really two different markets. Russian ports were obviously not blockaded, but Ukrainian ports were blockaded. So that signaling between those two markets collapsed. Then the Black Sea Grain Deal Initiative in July 2022, again, what was happening in wheat was driving what was happening in with the Russian wheat at Russian ports. So people were focusing more on supply effects and what was happening in Ukraine than Russia. Chicago wheat also influenced the Ukrainian wheat, and that's because of the global markets as they adjusted. Expansion of supply, a good bumper harvest in the Americas, and so on. And the Ukrainian wheat causally influenced Chicago wheat. So again, the Chicago markets really paying attention to what was happening domestically and with trade in Ukraine. Now, our tables in the paper, of course, have many more of these. I'm being very, very general just to illustrate how these global effects affect futures prices from a trading and a hedging position.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Markets are, you know, still, again, well ahead of a year ago. So at the end of 2023, we saw some, some real corrections develop in the futures market. And I think that came out of just the fact that we'd had such a run-up. And so there was an opportunity there for some profit taking, but it was really compounded by the fact that we had a lot of geopolitical events and a lot more concern kind of develop about the general economy in the U.S. and the potential for problems. We haven't really seen those problems at this point in time, but there's a lot of concern about that going forward.
Oklahoma State livestock economist Dr. Daryl Peel.
So we ended the year on a little bit more of an uncertain note, I guess, but uncertain at a much higher level. And, we're still really haven't changed the overall market fundamentals here in terms of the tighter cattle supplies that we have, the decrease in beef production that has happened and will continue as we go forward.